From the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland, this is NIH Research Radio. Welcome to Episode 6 of NIH Research Radio with news about the ongoing medical research at the National Institutes of Health, the nation's medical research agency. I'm your host, Bill Schmalfeld. Coming up on this edition of NIH Research Radio, Wally Akinso has a story about how high doses of an experimental bird flu vaccine encourage immune responses in most healthy adults. That's according to a study funded by the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. There's news from the National Eye Institute that says although 94% of Americans age 12 and over have good vision, the remaining 6% are visually impaired. Wally will be back with news from the National Diabetic Education Program indicating that it's never too early to prevent diabetes. And there are some new findings that show boys and girls who exhibit high levels of risky behaviors have similar chances of developing symptoms of depression. But first, a state of the science conference conducted at NIH that will be important to the approximately one-third of Americans who take multivitamin and mineral supplements for chronic disease prevention. That's coming up in 30 seconds right here on NIH Research Radio. A key to good health is eating healthy foods. So, dash to the produce aisle for fruits and vegetables. Dash to the dairy case for fat-free or low-fat milk products. Dash to the foods that are lower in saturated fat, trans fat, cholesterol, sodium, and added sugars. Dash to foods that help fight high blood pressure. For more information, visit www.dashplan.org. This message brought to you by the National Institutes of Health and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Are you one of the millions of Americans who takes multivitamin and mineral supplements, believing they'll help you prevent chronic disease? Wally Akinso has this report about a recently concluded State of the Science conference on that subject.
An estimated one-third of American adults take multivitamin and mineral supplements for chronic disease prevention. Yet scientists attending a recent State of the Science conference at the National Institutes of Health concluded that more vigorous scientific research will be needed to determine whether these over-the-counter supplements are in fact doing any good in that regard. Dr. J. Michael McGinnis, panel chair, discussed the findings.
With respect to the health effects and what the science tells us about the health effects, overall, we find that the available data are insufficient to make a firm recommendation for or against their use in the general population. There is promising information from one well-designed trial to suggest that antioxidants and zinc may slow the progression of age-related macular degeneration. From trials of simple impaired nutrients, there is indication that calcium and vitamin D have a beneficial effect on mineral density and fracture risk in postmenopausal women. The panel reaffirms previous recommendations of expert panels for the consumption of folic acid supplements by women of childbearing age for the prevention of neural tube defects in their offspring.
According to Dr. McGinnis, as more and more Americans seek strategies for maintaining good health and preventing disease, and as the marketplace offers an increasing number of products to fill that desire, it is important that consumers have the best possible information to inform their choices. Full text of the panel's draft, State of the Science Statement, is available at consensus.nih.gov. This is Wally Akinso at the National Institutes of Health, Bethesda, Maryland.
A study by the National Institutes of Health found that although 94% of Americans age 12 and over have good vision, the remaining 6% are visually impaired. That's about 14 million Americans, 11 million of whom suffer from uncorrected refractive errors such as nearsightedness that could be improved by wearing eyeglasses or contact lenses.
Some of them likely don't even know it. There are a fair number of people, including a fair number of teenagers, and they may or may not know they need glasses. They may have trouble seeing the blackboard or reading road signs, seeing the ball when they're playing ball.
That was Dr. Mary Frances Koch, chief of the National Eye Institute's Epidemiology Branch and one of the authors of the study. She said providing corrective lenses to people who need them is an important public health issue with implications for safety and quality of life. She offered several recommendations for medical professionals and the public at large.
Well, we'd like to recommend to physicians that they counsel their patients about the importance of eye health and encourage them to go and participate in routine vision screenings and to get regular eye exams. We'd like to have parents talk to their children about eye health and encourage them to participate in vision screenings held at schools. We'd like vision screening opportunities for the general public to be expanded.
Dr. Koch also stressed the importance of efforts to increase public awareness about the importance of routine eye examinations and suggested that people who already wear corrective lenses return to their eye care professionals for periodic eye exams. In addition to teens, people with diabetes and the economically disadvantaged have higher rates of visual impairment and, according to the study, can most benefit from corrective lenses. The study was published in the May 10th issue of the Journal of the American Medical Association. For more information, log on to www.nei.nih.gov. Coming up, it's never too early to prevent diabetes. That story and more when NIH Research Radio continues. Every day, researchers are unlocking many of cancer's mysteries. But what's the best way to accurately and effectively communicate this important news to other researchers, doctors, patients, and the public? One trusted source for up-to-date cancer research news and information comes from the National Cancer Institute, the federal government's premier cancer research agency. The NCI Cancer Bulletin is a free weekly online publication that offers a single source for comprehensive coverage of cancer programs and research. In recent weeks, the NCI Cancer Bulletin has reported on higher numbers of cancers in type 2 diabetics, new drugs being effective in women with stage 2 or 3 operable breast cancer, how NCI's budget has been affected by federal belt tightening, and caring for cancer caregivers. You can keep pace with these and other topics by reading the NCI Cancer Bulletin. Visit www.cancer.gov/NCI Cancer Bulletin to sign up for your free electronic subscription today. How old should a person be before deciding to do what it takes to prevent diabetes? Wally Akinso has this report.
It's never too early to prevent diabetes. That's not just good advice. It's the name of the latest diabetes prevention campaign message put out by the National Diabetes Education Program. Specifically, the campaign is designed to spread the word about the risk for type 2 diabetes that's faced by mothers and their babies due to a condition known as gestational diabetes mellitus, or GDM. The condition affects about 7% of all U.S. pregnancies annually, resulting in about 200,000 cases a year. After pregnancy, 5 to 10% of women who had GDM progress to have type 2 diabetes, and their children are at increased risk for obesity and diabetes during childhood and adolescence compared to other children. The campaign offers materials to help women with a history of GDM take steps to prevent or delay type 2 diabetes and help their children lower their risk for the disease. According to Dr. Griffin Rogers, Acting Director of the National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Diseases.
The resources offered are prevention materials in the form of a packet or booklet. This booklet, which is entitled Small Steps, Big Reward, Prevent Type 2 Diabetes, has a lot of informational materials, both in English and in Spanish. It has practical advice that people can use on how one can stay fit and increase one's exercise. In addition, it also contains valuable information on how to follow a sensible eating plan.
The campaign comes from the results from a NIDDK-funded study, the Diabetes Prevention Program, which found that people at an increased risk for type 2 diabetes can prevent or delay the onset of the disease by losing 5 to 7% of their body weight through increased physical activity and a low-fat, low-calorie eating plan. Dr. Rogers believes that diabetes prevention is proven, possible, and powerful.
What we hope to achieve is increase awareness, and in addition, we hope to share a positive message and a message of hope and empowerment to counter, you know, in a sense, what has been seen in some communities, almost sort of a fatalistic belief. That is, my parents have diabetes, my grandparents have diabetes, I'm quite likely to develop diabetes myself, and so there's really nothing that I can do about it. Well, the purpose of this campaign is really to empower people to realize that with small steps, the diet program and the weight loss, as well as exercise, in fact, they can prevent diabetes, and there is very good scientific and medical evidence to prove that. In addition, we hope that the people that hear this message will share it with their friends, coworkers, and family members, and thereby serve as our ambassadors to attempt to amplify the number of people that this message actually reaches.
The NDEP has materials for healthcare professionals and for people at risk for diabetes, including older adults, American Indians and Alaska Natives, Hispanics, African Americans and Asian Americans, and Pacific Islanders. For more information, visit www.ndep.nih.gov. This is Wally Akinso at the National Institutes of Health, Bethesda, Maryland.
New findings from a study supported by the National Institute on Drug Abuse show that girls and boys who exhibit high levels of risky behaviors have similar chances of developing symptoms of depression. Dr. Nora D. Volkoff, director of NIDA, talked about the significance of the study.
This is very relevant because what it is showing is that engaging in risky behaviors appears to be associated with a higher risk for depression. It follows that if you can do interventions that can prevent adolescents to engage in risky behaviors, you may in fact be preventing depression.
The study also showed that gender differences become apparent with low and moderate levels of risky behaviors, with girls being significantly more likely than boys to experience symptoms of depression. The study, which includes data from almost 19,000 teenagers, was published in the May 15th issue of The Archives of Women's Mental Health. For more information, log on to www.nida.nih.gov. Coming up, some encouraging news in the potential fight against bird flu. That story coming up next on NIH Research Radio. Got a youngster around the house who's on the heavy side but is otherwise healthy? The National Institutes of Health would like to talk to you to see what they can learn from your child. Not only are all study-related tests and treatments provided for free, but all participants are compensated. Check out clinicaltrials.gov or call 866-999-1116 for more info. NIH is a nonprofit government agency, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. What's the latest in the potential fight against bird flu? Wally Akinso has this report.
High doses of an experimental bird flu vaccine encourages immune responses in most healthy adults, according to a study funded by the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. About half the adults in the study, after getting an initial and then a booster dose at the highest dosage of the tested vaccine, developed levels of infection-fighting antibodies, which the current test predicts would neutralize the virus, according to Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the NIAID.
In that study, 451 individuals were tested, and it was found to be well tolerated, and it induced an immune response that would be predictive that this vaccine would be protective against H5N1 isolate that was used in the vaccine.
In general, the study showed that the higher the dosage of the vaccine, the greater the antibody response produced in the participants. Dr. Fauci said, although the immune responses seem to be positive, the dosage of the vaccine is still a concern.
The dose that was required to reach that level of immunity was considerably higher than the dose that's required to induce protective immunity in seasonal flu. Therefore, there will have to be other studies subsequent to this to try and get the vaccine to be able to be usable in a much lower dose.
The NIAID is investigating other options that may allow a reduction in the dosage. In addition, NIAID is pursuing other approaches to an H5N1 vaccine, including vaccines made in cell cultures rather than grown in eggs. This is Wally Akinso at the National Institutes of Health, Bethesda, Maryland.
And with that, we come to the end of another edition of NIH Research Radio. I'd like to thank Wally Akinso for his reports, as well as Dr. Nora Volkoff, director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse, NIAID director Dr. Anthony Fauci, Dr. Mary Frances Koch, chief of the National Eye Institute's Epidemiology Branch, and Dr. Griffin Rogers, acting director of the National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Diseases. Please join us Friday, June 2nd, when Episode 7 of NIH Research Radio will be available for download. These stories are also available on the NIH Radio News Service website. That's nih.gov/news/radio. Our daily 60-second feature, NIH Health Matters, is heard on nearly 1,000 radio stations nationwide, as well as on XM Satellite Radio and on the HealthStar Radio Network. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please feel free to contact me. The info is right there on the podcast webpage. I'm your host, Bill Schmalfelt. NIH Research Radio is a presentation of the NIH Radio News Service, a proud part of the News Media Branch, Office of Communications and Public Relations in the Office of the Director at the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland, an agency of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.